Hello and good afternoon to all my moon dancers out there. Welcome to my AMA. I am joined today by the absolutely amazing Priest of Aphrodite. Say hello, Priest.
Hello, I'm so glad to be here, my friend.
Who will be my interviewer this afternoon. I have my bottle of San Miguel here, which I am, it's a beer, enjoying to celebrate 3,000 subscribers to my channel. And thank you very much to everybody for sending your questions to me. A lot of them were extremely difficult to answer. Ooh. So hopefully we will be able to entertain you this afternoon with some good answers. Over to you then, Priest. What is the first question you have for me?
All right. And cheers on the 3,000 number, by the way, my friend.
Salute. Thank you very much.
All right. First up, we have our friend, Anarchist Latina. Mm-hmm. And she asks, what's your favorite movie?
Without a shadow of a doubt, it is American Werewolf in London. Have you seen that one?
Yep, we discussed it, I think, a few weeks ago when we were working on a project.
Oh, I think we might have done. Which is, it was considered by many to be the grandfather of the horror comedy genre. 80s horror movies were something completely different. You know?
It's true.
And the special effects by John Landis were superb. You've got Kermit the Frog and Miss Piggy being horribly slaughtered by demons in this. You know, it's just one of those films that stands out. And the shower scene with Jenny Agutter. Oh, my Lord. Oh, dear. I'd watch it just for that. It is, if you haven't seen it out there, Moon Dancers, watch it and let me know what you think.
All right. Awesome. It is a good movie, and he's right. It was a classic at the time, although for many of you, that's probably long before you were born.
Oh, don't start that. You're now making me feel very old.
Oh, you know I love you, man. All right. She also asked, what's your favorite book?
The Hobbit by J.R.R. Tolkien.
Oh, I'm with you, my friend. That's right up there.
It's a book that I must have read 20, 30 times. I don't know. I keep coming back to it every few years. It is so well put together. If you're talking about structuring a novel, each chapter stands alone. It has all the classic hallmarks of protagonist, antagonist, beginning, middle, and end, conflict resolution, and it leads on seamlessly to the next chapter. In fact, the Hobbit himself entitles his own story There and Back Again. So it is the classic, mm-hmm. It is the classic journey story. And if you want to study, if you want to know how to write a novel, look at that. It is absolutely perfect.
I think the other thing that's interesting for maybe people that don't understand when it was written and the origins that Tolkien wrote, the characters that he develops and the way he structures it, that becomes the narrative for almost all of what you now know as common fantasy lore across video games, movies, etc. Really, I call Tolkien the grandfather to all of that, to all role-playing, you know, to all of that fantasy we know, you know, orcs and
absolutely.
Elves,
I mean,
it's all Tolkien.
People believe that hobbits are intrinsic to English fairy tale folklore. They're not. He created them. Before he wrote The Hobbit, they didn't exist. And yet they are so rounded in terms of character. I mean, I have a tattoo on my arm written in Elvish script.
in Quenya?
Yes. And you know the story. I mean, Tolkien, as a language professor, created this language, the language of the elves, as an exercise. Yep. And his friend, C.S. Lewis, who wrote The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, challenged him to say, you know, well, kind of describe the people who would speak this language. And he created the whole story of The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit being part of that. I think The Lord of the Rings is too for me, it's a great story, but it's too epic. It rambles a little bit too much. The Hobbit.
I think lots of young people would agree with you.
Yeah.
People find it long and rambly. That's fair.
And never try and read the Silmarillion. That is just a mistake.
Oh, come on, dude. Not only did I read the Silmarillion, I have Unfinished Tales, and I have Christopher Tolkien's variations of all of the Unfinished Tales. So, yeah,
well,
I guess call me a fan.
Well, I actually met Tim Tolkien, who is a metal...
Oh.
He is a metal worker, and he produced a piece of artwork that I had commissioned for the place that I used to work at, and it was above the door. Beautiful sort of wrought iron... leaves and things like that. And he tells the story of the Silmarillion. The Silmarillion was a mistake. It really was. It should not have happened.
It's kind of a, like, it's a weird collection of stuff that the editors put together later, and there's actually variations of it. But we digress. And it'll be on Amazon, I think, what, next year or something?
Yeah, anyway. Probably. Anyway, so, read the if you've not read it, read The Hobbit. Okay.
Yeah. I agree with you there. All right. So, and by the way, I'll send you a picture of some metalwork when we're offline. But that's another story. All right. She continues with her questions here. Are you into theater at all?
Am I into theater? Oh, my goodness. Look, you're talking to somebody whose background is in performing arts. I studied drama at university, and I took part in quite a few productions. I used to live not too far from Stratford-upon-Avon, so I spent far too much time at the Royal Shakespeare Theatre than was probably good for me, watching various performances there. And it is just... I like film, I like television, but to me there is nothing to compare with a live performance, because the audience is part of that. It's like Greek theatre, where theatre was considered almost it was a ritual. It was almost a religious experience. And
right,
in the same way, when you go to a theatre, when you're part of that, I know that as an audience member, I know that as a performer, as a director, as a lighting technician, you are part of the performance in a way that you can't be when you watch it in a cinema. And there is that element of ritual about it. It brings people together. It enables you to see the human condition for what it really is. There is nothing so powerful as theatre in terms of social binding. You know, even as part of the audience, you can talk to members of the audience before the performance, after the performance. There was a performance I saw in America, in New York on Broadway. It was a performance of Oklahoma, and the tagline was, "This is not your mama's Oklahoma." And I remember seeing the musical when I was a young kid. It was, there was a point where it got very, very dark.
Interesting.
And the set was decorated around the outside with, on the walls there were rows of rifles all the way around. And, you know, a halftime break, we had chili in front of us, so we actually ate some chili. It was theatre in the round. And at that point when it got dark, Curly was trying to persuade one of the characters to kill himself. And we had this screen. Everything went black. We had the screen, and they projected a handheld camera right close to his face. And, you know, he's saying, "Nobody will miss you. You know, why don't you just do it? Do it. It's the best thing for everybody concerned." And it became... I remember my friend who I was with, it was her 50th birthday, leaving the room being very uncomfortable, and me saying to her that the performance would be very differently received by a British audience because of the connotations that I guess gun law would would have in the United States.
Oh, I see.
But they were making some very, very powerful comments on modern society. And that is the power of drama. If it leaves, if a performance leaves you with more questions unanswered than you have going into it, I think that's a successful performance.
I think that's a beautiful answer. It did remind me of one thing I think I'll add, and that is you and I have had some discussions, and I won't recount them, but that there's some differences as you perform for the microphone for GWA.
Yeah.
It's quite different than performing for the theater. And so you and I have had some discussions about that. And so it's clear that your skill and background in theater serves you extremely well. And you've certainly taught me some things, as we've discussed, right, in doing some of the collaborations. But it's also, the skill set is different when you're performing, you know, solo. Mm-hmm. And anyway, so that leads into the next question she asks. Her last question is, do you do anything to prep for an audio?
I do a warm up for my voice. Yes. Ping pong, King Kong, bing. I warm up my voice beforehand. I might have a glass of water or something like that. Sometimes I might use props to get me in the right frame of mind. For example, if I'm doing an MDOM audio, and despite what my listeners might think, not every single one of my audios is MDOM.
I probably have the same problem.
I tend to wear my props are leather gloves. So I put I put my leather gloves on and I get into character.
This
is a trick I learned. I studied Stanislavski, you know, method acting. And if there is something you can latch onto the character, and the character to me of a dominant always wears leather gloves, if that makes any kind of sense. I don't know.
At least in your mind, that's how you visualize
it. In my mind, and it gets me into that frame, yeah.
I got it. Okay. Mm. Cool. All right, moving on. Molly Molotov 666. She asks, what got you into this?
I was in a long-term relationship for most of my life. And when that ended, I was at a bit of a loose end. My confidence as a man was rock bottom. And I'd always wanted to write. Well, I've written throughout my entire adult life. Most of those scribbles never saw the light of day. They ended up being burned, but that's another story. and I came across this site called Dirty Pen Pals, don't go there. Please do not go there now, because it is a shit show. It's a pickup joint. You don't want anything to do with it. But a few years ago, it was pretty good. And what you would do is you would send out a writing prompt, and you pick up somebody who was interested in writing a story with you. And I got interested in writing stories. I did a few. Sometimes the story would fizzle out because the partner ghosted me. That happens a lot. But there was this one person I linked up with, somebody from Texas, who would write a hell of a lot. I mean, she was writing 1500 words a day and sending me this huge chapter.
Wow.
And I felt honor bound to reply. So within the space of 6-7 weeks, we'd written about 70,000 words of this story. And it was amazing. It wasn't particularly sexy, I'll tell you that for a start. But it was an amazing story that had fantastic character development. We really enjoyed the whole process. Kind of wound up to a natural end at the end. And this is a very long story. To cut it short, I was doing some research involving cats. the story was about an English witch hunter and an American werecat who saved Philadelphia from a pack of werewolves. I know it sounds ridiculous, but it was a great story. And awesome. I was doing some research. I typed Kitty and I came up with the wrong kind of kitty cat, if you know what I mean. And I listened to a few audios as a lurker, and I thought, actually, I can do this myself. So, three whiskies later, I pressed the button, and my first audio was released into the world. And that is the story so far.
Awesome. I love it. All right. Moving on to a sweet friend of both of ours, Luxana Pop. She asks, what is the place you are most excited to see on your travels?
Couple of places. I mean, I've always wanted to go and see the Greek islands. Athens, because it is the seat of so many stories. I am a huge fan of Greek mythology, and I consider Athens to be the birthplace of democracy. I'm a staunch Democrat. I know that means something different in America, but I will say that, you know, I believe in those ideas of freedom that were originally espoused in ancient Greece. And also, it's kind of like this timeless landscape, beautiful part of the world. But I guess I also want to see Florence for similar reasons. The Florentines inherited that understanding of classical literature and art, and some of the fountains they have there, some of the artworks. I want to see the statue of David, the most perfect man, you know, and just have a strong coffee in a little cafe there, walk along the cobbled streets, and just immerse myself in thousands of years of history. That would be amazing.
Let's put it on the list, my friend. Let's put it on the list. I love it. Yeah. All right. Where is your favorite place to write?
Well, nowadays I don't have much of a choice. I mean, I write in my apartment. But a few years ago, when I lived somewhere else, there was a bench that I had in a place called the Gypsy Wood. It was called that because it used to be the home of travelers. So you'd have travelers who would arrive, park their caravans there, stay a few weeks, and then go. It was a nature reserve because they had newts there and butterflies that were protective species. You'd get the occasional dog walker, but most of the time you could be alone. So I used to go there when I needed to be out of the house for a while. And I would record, or I would write, and you know, you can sit in one place and you can see the entire world, and that had that effect on me. It didn't matter where I was, when I sat on that bench with my glass of Coca-Cola and my Cornish pasty and my pad and pencil, I could see the whole world stretching out before me.
Love it. All right. What is the best piece of advice you ever received?
Okay. Best piece of advice I've ever received. Not to take yourself too seriously.
I think that's one of those things that comes with age, doesn't it?
Yeah, you know, you're right. A lot of young people in particular just have this idea of image. They have to project a certain image to everybody. No, people like you or they don't like you. Just be yourself. And at the end of the day, if you can't laugh at yourself, then I think you are a hollow person.
I like it. All right. What inspires you?
What inspires me?
That's what it says.
love. I am. No, let's not get soppy, shall we? I am. Well, I've been disappointed in love. But I've also felt what it's like to be. I have been lucky enough in my life to be truly loved by three women. And I know some people can go through their entire lives and not know what that's like. But it makes me a bit of a, I would guess, hopeful romantic. Because when you think about life, what makes life truly living, truly worth living, it is love. It is love of another. It is love of your family, your friends, your wife, your children, your community, your world. There are many, many forms of love. But it really is the driving force, I think, behind humanity. Otherwise, if we cannot love, what are we as human beings? We're nothing. And that makes us, I guess, different from every other life form on this planet. I'm not saying that animals can't feel affection towards each other, but I would argue that only human beings can love.
Right. You know, I was listening to a discussion recently about, you know, relationships and things, and they made the differentiation, as the Greeks did, right? Because you mentioned Athens. The Greeks recognized that
there were many
philosophies.
There were many forms of love,
right.
Yeah.
Right. And so one of the limitations I think we have in English, right, is that we have a single word, love, and yet they had about seven, I believe it is, different words that we translate as love, right? Because we could, like, you could say you have a familial love, and it's one kind. You have a brotherly love. You have you can go look it up, but it's fairly well known. But I think it's, I don't know, I guess good, because a lot of our, as you say, a lot of our ideals about philosophy, you know, politics, such as ideas of democratic ideals and so on, really do come from the Greeks. And one of the problems I think we face when you talk about ideas of love is we don't do a good job at differentiating things like, you know, brotherly love, if you will, right? We have to put a preface on it, whereas the Greeks had a word for that, you know, love
yeah.
towards responsibility kind of ideas, right? I mean, there's just, it's to me, it's helpful, it was helpful for me to read through the way the Greeks talked about that versus how we did. So I think if you make a great point, it's just, we say love and it's this broad encompassing thing, but there's definitely something deeply moving about deeply, intensely, you know, romantic, soul consuming love. I would agree with you very much. I think it's beautiful.
Yeah.
All right. Last one from Loxana is, with a bang or a whisper?
Oh, a bang. I intend to. One of my favorite poets is Dylan Thomas. Excuse me. And he wrote a poem that contains the lines, "Do not go gently into that dread night. Rage, rage against the dying of the light." And that's how I want to go out. You know, it's you know, I'm going to shake my fist at whatever deity, at whatever deities exist out there, and I'm going to say, well, whatever happens next, you're going to know that I was on this earth.
I love it. All right, moving on. 84, I'm going to guess it's Lele, probably, L-E-L-E. All right.
Yeah.
And she asks, what do you find most attractive in a partner?
Well, I would describe myself as a sapiosexual, which means I find intelligence incredibly attractive. I always have done. I think that a woman who has an intelligent, inquiring, curious mind, somebody who is prepared to be open and receptive about new ideas, someone who explores the world and herself as part of that world, is just so enticing. It is just plus the fact that a good imagination, if a woman has a good imagination, a friend of mine once said to me, it's not what you've got, it's what you do with it that counts.
right. Makes sense to me, man. You know, I think as a younger person, of course, you sort of automatically cue into, you know, physical traits, right?
Yeah.
Appearance or whatever. But I think once you have a little bit of experience with different people, it becomes much more about, I don't even necessarily know if it's personality traits, but other things. So I would agree with you very much on that. Mm. Cool. All right. I'm curious. I'm kind of anxious for this next one. So here we go. What's the best sexual experience you've ever had?
If you'd asked me this question about a year ago, I'd have said without a shadow of a doubt, it was the thunderstorm. Shall I tell you about the thunderstorm? Okay. Right. my then girlfriend and I used to go to, there is a place on the borders between England and Wales, in the Malvern Hills, called British Camp. It's an old Iron Age hill fort, about 3,000 years old. And from the top of it, you can see the three counties of Herefordshire, Worcestershire, and Monmouthshire. It's a great place for star watching, and we used to go up there, take a picnic, just lie down a blanket and look at the stars. And you'd get the occasional dog walker, but nobody else. Anyway, one day, it was a very, very hot summer. And it hadn't rained for a while. We knew a thunderstorm was coming our way. We were halfway up. It was about a 3-mile walk to the top. And I was taking a picnic basket with me. You know, it's some chicken, cucumber sandwiches with the crusts cut off, bottle of Prosecco, 2 plastic glasses because I couldn't find any glass ones. We got halfway up. We met some people running down because it started to bruise up. The clouds were bruising for rain and there were sort of hot splashes of rain coming down. And I suggested to her that we go back to the car, and she looked over her shoulder at me and she flashed that smile, you know, the one. And she said, catch me, and ran off up the hill. Now, I was intemperate in my youth and I never resisted a challenge. So I ran, picnic basket banging away on my thigh, that kind of thing. And I remember the crest of the hill, and the sky was just, it was a cauldron. It was churning and swirling with dark black clouds, Bible black, and lightning raking the sky. I mean, it was nature in its roar. And she was standing there, and she walked up to me, and she placed her hands around my neck and she whispered in my ear, fuck me, please. I didn't need another invitation. I mean, we were rolling on the grass and I remember the smell of wet grass. If you've ever smelt that, you'll know what it's like. And we were just, I mean, she dug her nails in my back and I must have worn those marks for weeks. And I just poured myself into her. And look in her eyes. I've never forgotten that.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Love it.
I would not recommend sex in a thunderstorm because in hindsight, it was probably not the most sensible thing to do.
Fair point. Fair point. Mm. All right. Love it. Love the imagery. Mm. The intensity, right? That intensity. I love it.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on to the sweet crimson songbird. She asks, favorite musical and why?
The Rocky Horror Picture Show. Because it is such an iconic show. It has some fantastic lines in it, and I'm going to a performance in October in my local theatre, and I'm going as the narrator, so we're getting dressed up for this. Myself and two friends are going, and I part of the reason I like it is because I actually played the lead. I was Dr. Frankenfurter in a college production. I wore the stockings and the high heels. I almost fractured my ankle on the third night and ended up doing part of the performance. I had to walk up. Have you ever tried to walk in high heels? How the hell do women
actually
manage that?
that's a story, but yes.
It's
and it wasn't just high heels, if truth be told.
Well, I was wearing stockings and a feather boa and a corset at the time.
Ah, okay.
And my,
you got me beat by a leather boa.
And my director insisted on the hairy chest as well, which was
right. Well, it fits the image.
And I was walking up these stairs, and I just collapsed, and I had to sing the rest of it. I was never a brilliant singer, but I got the part because I wasn't afraid to camp it up, and boy, did I ever camp it up. I see you've met my handyman. He thought you were the candyman. It is, as I said before about audience participation, I've been to performances. Yep. The audience really gets so involved in this.
Right.
And it's one of those shows which I've never seen a bad performance of this, no matter who puts it on, because I guess it kind of just hits those 1950s sci-fi movies and the whole idea behind it, and everything is just so above and beyond, just so vibrant, so fun, that you can't help enjoying yourself seeing one of those.
That's interesting. I guess I didn't realize that was a worldwide deal. I mean, so just going again for me back to the 80s, there's a little local, you know, kind of indie theater. Mm. And basically every Friday night after their normal showings, they ran Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Oh.
And the deal was that you go down and everybody there, you know, a lot of people would dress up and sing along. And they,
I can feel it. I can feel it.
I know. To my knowledge, I think they did it until they tore the place down just a few years ago.
Oh.
Like that's what they did. I thought it was local. I guess I didn't think about realizing that's kind of a global phenomenon, but it makes sense.
Absolutely. You know, absolutely.
Interesting. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, yeah. So for those who live, you know, maybe in other countries, there's a movie and you can go watch it. But yeah, the acting and singing along, even in the theater, was encouraged. I mean, people would get up on stage, follow the actions, the whole audience sings along. It's a thing, you know, very much.
Yes, definitely.
All right. Mm-hmm. Going to keep moving on here. We're not even partway through. This is going to be long. Okay. So Checkerboard Cookies asks, favorite drink, either alcoholic or non?
Oh, okay. Let's go for both then. My favorite alcoholic drink is a cocktail. It's called a Dark and Stormy. So it's dark rum with ginger beer or ginger ale. And you have lime with it and a spoonful of demerara sugar. And the demerara sugar just gives the alcohol that little bit of a kick. It balances up the flavors. I'm sure I'm a pirate at heart. I do like my rum. And the non-alcoholic, I'm going to be very English here, an Earl Grey tea.
Oh, yeah. Don't get much more English, Picard. All right.
So.
So there you go. All right. Mm-hmm. Did you want to do a non?
Probably a lovely cloudy lemonade, homemade, not something from the shops.
There you go.
Yeah.
Love it. Mm. Love it. All right. Bernadette 2013. Does your preference change with the season, or do you have an absolute favorite you can drink regardless of day or season?
Good question.
For time.
I would say the preference changes because there's a... Around about autumn is my favorite season of the year, you know, leading up to Christmas. And I always start drinking around about October time. I start drinking gingerbread latte because I love the little gingerbread man that goes with it. And I even did an audio based on that.
There you go.
It does change a little bit. That reminds me of the season. I guess a lot of people have drinks they associate with different seasons or different places or special right. events, that kind of thing.
Makes sense. All right. Let's see. Sick Rose, Thou Art Sick asks, what sort of music do you enjoy?
Pretty much anything. I have a rather eclectic taste in music, but... If I like it, it doesn't matter the genre. I would guess most of my musical taste, though, is swing, jazz. I'm a big Sinatra fan, very big. My parents raised me on Frank Sinatra, which is why I can probably sing most of his songs off heart. But there is no cooler sound in the world to me than Frank Sinatra.
All right. Well, the next question is, who's your favorite bands? But I think maybe you sort of addressed that.
Yeah.
All right. How has doing audio helped you?
How has it helped me?
That's what it says.
I think, well, the whole idea behind me doing audios in the first place was it was a way that I wanted to see if I was still viable, I guess, to see whether or not other people still found me attractive. And I have been lucky enough to make some very, very good friends through doing audios. It was a sort of therapy. It helped me work through a few confidence issues, one or two other issues as well. It also, I have had so many comments from people who've said that my audios have helped them in some way. And
right.
you don't expect that doing audio porn is actually going to be, it's actually going to have a positive effect on people's lives. And when someone says it does, it's a very humbling experience.
I couldn't agree more. Handful of times, and a lot of times they're private comments. I mean, so people don't even see it. At least for me, you don't even see it publicly. But when somebody, you know, I mean, a nice comment is very much appreciated. Mm. But when I get a private one, especially when it's attached to a story, right, that explains what's going on in their life or what happened, and you know that it helped them through a hard time.
Yeah.
Out of a relationship or, you know, whatever difficult thing. I don't know. That just means a lot. So I'm with you.
Mm.
All right. I kind of know the answer to this next question, but we'll let the audience in. So do you find yourself more sexually adventurous or are you more vanilla?
Oh, come on now. Yeah. if you had asked me 5 years ago what my kink list was, it would have been very limited. Now it's kind of like four or five sides of A4. You name it, and I will pretty much give it a go. I mean, there are some kinks that I wouldn't touch for various reasons. It's not that I kink shame; it's just they're not for me. But in terms of being more adventurous, of opening my mind to new experiences, I guess the main reason for that is that you find people who are like-minded, and you think,
right,
well, I'm not the only one. You know, there's not something right. weird about me. Actually, you know, other people feel the same kind of way, and that
right.
then gives you permission to explore your kinks.
Right.
Permission is maybe the wrong word, but it makes you feel less isolated. And that's what I think the strength of our little community is. You know, you can share stories with people, and you will find that a lot of people have gone through the same kind of thing that you have. And in
right.
discovering themselves, in being freer, more open, and I'm a great believer in open communication, they are better because of it.
Totally agree with you. I think that's one of the great hallmarks. I've even talked to some people about understanding more about, you know, kink-based communication, even for more vanilla relationships or, you know, married relationships or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is because of the ideas of consent and clear communication,
mm-hmm.
right? If you understand the terminology and communication, not just around specific sex acts, but
yeah.
around other aspects, it very much translates into the idea of having sometimes hard or necessary conversations that are clear about other parts of a relationship. So I think that's good.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Okay, this next one's kind of unrelated, but what do you think about The Last Jedi?
I'm going to show my age here, aren't I? I remember watching the first Star Wars film when I was a kid. It is the only film still to this day that I have ever seen twice in a cinema. I remember watching the film, and there were a lot of kids in the cinema, and we were throwing popcorn at each other. And the opening scene when this spaceship just comes on and on and on and
right.
on. I mean, that took my breath away. We had quite literally never seen anything like this before. And
right.
when it finished, I was with a friend of mine. We went out of the theater, straight back in, joined the line to go and see the second showing. That's the only time in my life I've ever done something like that. So I am a Star Wars fan. And the last year, I've even met Dave Frowse, who played Darth Vader.
Oh, really?
He's a West Country boy like me. It's okay. Dave Frowse, who was Darth Vader, was really pissed off. I met him at a convention once. Because when they get the great reveal, not only is someone else playing his voice, James Earl Jones,
right,
but someone right. else is playing his face as well. So, you know, you didn't
right.
even get to see the real Dave Frowse. Dave Frowse was
right.
was a West Country boy like me. So he actually talked like this. So this is how Darth Vader actually sounded before they dubbed his voice. You were... The Force is with you, young Skywalker. But you ain't a Jedi yet, my dear.
Oh, my God.
You can see why they dubbed his voice. But he was a great... He was a bit of a local hero in the West Country. Not a lot of stars came from my part of the world. So anyway, getting back to the original question... What do I think of The Last Jedi? Well, if an infinite number of monkeys and an infinite number of typewriters were placed together in the same room, you would eventually be able to write The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep, you're not alone. I think a lot of the, more veteran fans, especially that followed the original and some of the lore, were somewhat disappointed by the last two movies. I mean, Dave Filoni tries to clean some stuff up, but
yeah.
and he pays a lot of fan service, but yeah, from a story standpoint.
There's no bloody reason or rhyme to anything going on in this film. It's like the Mary Sue Space Chronicles. It really bloody is.
I'm not disagreeing with you. You know, there's some things I love about Star Wars, but, you know, I don't know. Anyway, yeah. All right, this is not a Star Wars bash on Star Wars.